The basic topic of Sefer Bereishis really is family, the family of Avram, the family of Yitzchak, the family of Yaakov, the family of Yosef. But one thing which has always struck me is incredibly missing from the discussion in Sefer Bereishis is another form of relationship, something which might be equally important in our lives, which is, if you ask people, who are your closest relationships with, what would you say?
Parents and
family and
buddies
and friends. Yeah. So what happened to friendship? Let me ask you this question. Are there any sets of friends in Sefer Bereishis? We'll take any suggestions. Friends. I mean, friends is a pretty basic life category. Everybody here at the table has them. Some people are closer with them than others. But you would all, I think, and you can tell me if this is not true biographically in your life, I think you would all say that there's at least one person who you would consider an important friend. Over at some point in your life, maybe now, maybe in some point in the past, okay? But yet friendship seems to be utterly absent from Sefer Bereishis.
Or Shimon and Levi, but they're brothers.
They're brothers. Brothers.
Yeah, they're
close brothers. Not only, by the way, not only brothers from the same father, but brothers from the same mother. Back to back. Shimon was number two. Levi was number three. With
so
Yehuda batting cleanup.
Friendship within the context of family.
Okay, but that's already brotherhood.
And Yisachar and Zvulun.
Sure, brothers.
Yeah.
Yisachar and Zvulun. Can't get more brotherly than that. All right, Andrew goes to the text.
I don't know, this is not your
statement. You're not going to scare me. I know that old lawyer's trick. Yeah, my father's been cross-examined by many an attorney, and we said when he says they get the books, it means that they've got nothing. They're just trying to scare you. No, because that's what they do. They hold the piece of paper, but it's like a blank sheet of paper. There's nothing on it. So my dad knows that's when he's got them.
Okay. Please do that, too.
Oh, really?
Sure.
Oh, I've never... Thank God.
That's just what I've learned, man.
Wait, yeah, right. Now, Larry, you've got a friend, right? You had a friend who told you.
Larry says channel 4.
It's from Detective Novel.
Oh, okay. Well, that's an important source of information. So... Okay, does anybody have any guesses? Nothing. Zero.
Friends.
What do we call that, Morty? What do we call that in Yiddish? Zero nothing?
Gornished.
Exactly, okay?
Stickle gornished.
Exactly, so...
Stickle gornished.
And what's less than gornished? Gornished mid-gornished, okay? That's a little joke for Morty and myself. So, what I want to do...
He speaks you.
Very little.
Okay. There are two acceptable answers to that as we distribute the sheets. It's a bissel or a shtickle. Either is acceptable. So I want to discuss the emergence of friendship in the Torah. Because friendship really emerges. For all intents and purposes in this week's parsha. So Yonatan and David are actually very good example of friends, but just recall something. What's my answer to Tobin going to be? It's not entirely true.
It's not in Torah.
Well, yeah, that's also true. It's in Navi and not Torah. But let's say I was being liberal and expanding the question to Tanakh. No. But hold on. But there's a more basic answer.
Yeah.
Is that really a purely friendship? Isn't there a family connection there?
David and Yonatan.
Yeah, they're brothers-in-law. Right. David married Michal. Yeah. That's Yonatan's sister.
The world was small back then.
Ah, okay. Okay, very good. Right. Doesn't count. Technicality.
Like David and women, it's not clear.
Technicality. Okay, so...
Well, these are the Jewish people. We're all related. At this point, we're at the beginning.
Right.
So, are we allowed... The real question is, can you be friends with a non-Jew?
I'll answer it. Yes, the answer is yes. You're allowed to be al pi halacha. You can be friends with a non-Jew. So, why is it that there's no friendship, very little friendship in Bereishis, and in which context does friendship emerge? That's really my question. Here's the thesis. When stories appear in the Torah, it's very important for us to realize that they're not just stories, but they're kind of archetypes, paradigms of concepts. Let me give you an analogy. The Vilna Gaon, the Gra says, the first time a word appears in the Torah, That's the most important time, because that gives you an insight into what it means in all other contexts. The word can have multiple meanings, but the primary, the essential meaning of the word is always the first time it appears in the Torah. This obviously would not be possible with a human document, but Torah is Hashem Tamima. So the first time a word is introduced, that gives you an insight. The same thing, let me give you a second example of the principle. The Ramban says about all of the stories in Bereishis, Masa Avosim on the Banim. The stories which are included in the Torah are those which are important in the Torah. So my way of the way that I would put that, I think this is really true to the Ramban, but just building off of that, the principle is that they're kind of archetypes. So if the Torah is introducing friendship to us, what that means...
Can I try one second.
That means that the Torah is telling us that this is the essence of friendship. So we have to pay very careful attention to where the Torah introduces friendship. Yeah, Andrew, go ahead. Knock us out.
Eliezer. Is he a relationship?
Well, Eliezer is not a friend. What is he? He's an Eved. He's an employee. The loyalist of employees. He's the first, great employee.
Doesn't that seem like a friend?
Not really. It's a different kind of relationship. A friendship is relationship between equals.
Right. Well, then how about, but he's more than what you expect out of your usual employee.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe he's an employee who goes above and beyond, but a friend he is not. It's a very different kind of relationship.
He's a Talmud.
Let me give you one possibility before we come to this week's parsha. But again, we really it's a different kind of relationship. I'll just raise it as a Havamina. Avram has a relationship with Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, who are referred to in the Torah as Baalei Bris Avram. They are his treaty partners. So they actually had a defense treaty. What was the treaty? That when Avram, the agreement apparently was that Avram went to war, they would watch the home front. How do we know this to be true? Because when Avram went to war against the four kings to rescue Lot, who guarded his back? Who guarded his property? Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, which is why when Melech Sedom offers Avram all of the spoils at the end of the war, and when I say offer, I mean that Avram had everything in his possession, and Melech Sedom said, "You can keep them. Thanks a lot, Melech Sedom." Okay, Avram didn't. He said, "Michut v'ad tzroch nal, I will not take even the shoelace of yours. You low life. Michut v'ad tzroch nal." They did. So he says, but who do I insist gets their portion? Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, Hema, Yichu, Chalkam. But that's a little different than a friendship. I mean, it could be construed as a friendship, but it's actually a treaty. It's a pact. So friendship emerges for the first time in this week's Parsha. And the word for friend, Re'ehu, is really used in this context. That's important. So what I want to try and do tonight is tackle a very big topic, which is what is the essence of friendship, how does the Torah look at it, and how does it emerge? So let's take a look at source 1. Vayehi ba'eis hahi, vayered Yehuda me'eis echav. Yehuda leaves the family. Vayet ad ish adulami ushmo chira. And he turned, but vayet doesn't only mean he turned, but it means to lean. He was knocked off balance, and he had to lean. As the song goes, lean on me when you're not strong, I'll be your friend, I'll help you carry on. It's really mamish exactly what happened here. Vayetad ish adulami ushmo chira. He had to lean on an Adulamite man whose name was Chira. So why was Yehuda out of the family? Beautiful chazal. Take a look at source 2. Vayhi ba'isahi. Sheyat Yehuda es echav limkor es Yosef. So after Judah had given his brothers the advice to sell Yosef, remember what was going to happen? The Torah says that the brothers wanted to kill Yosef. So first Reuven tries to sell Yosef, but then Reuven fails because Reuven leaves. Okay, he doesn't stick it out. And then Yehuda comes along and he says an important line. He says, "Ma betza, what will we gain? Kin harog es achinu v'chisinu es damo, by killing our brother and covering it up. L'chuvenim karenu la yishmeilim v'yadenu al tihibo. So let's sell him." So later on, the brothers came to him and they said, so ostensibly Yehuda saved Yosef's life because they were going to kill him. Right, but the brothers came to Yehuda and they said, "Kevan shera'u avihen osek b'sako b'tanis." So when they saw that Yaakov was despondent, he was beside himself. Yaakov for 22 years was a shadow of himself. He was half dead. When Yaakov finds out that Yosef is alive again, the Torah says, "Vatechi ruach Yaakov avihen." He came back to life. He was mamish dead. He didn't have any Ruach HaKodesh. The whole idea is that he was a shadow of himself, so they blamed it all on Yehuda. So they said, "Amru li Yehuda melech ha'isa aleinu. You were our leader. Ve'amru lanu l'machro. And you told us to sell him. V'shamanu l'chan. We listened to you. V'im ha'isa omer Patru l'shalom, if you would have told us, let him go, let the kid go, hayinu shomim l'cha, we would have listened to you. So Yehuda was so depressed.
It's rather self-serving.
I agree. But nonetheless, Yehuda's sense of guilt over what he had done to his brother, what he had failed to do, and what he had done to his father was overwhelming, and he left the family.
Are there any alternate midrashim?
This is absolutely the mainstream view. There are a few other perspectives.
View that he was to blame?
No. Not that he was to blame, but that he felt he was to blame because he didn't go far enough in saving Yosef, which is very reasonable. Because you see how influential he was. He says, "Lechu v'nim karenu la yishma'elim," and they listened to him.
Right, it's hard to know though, because
it could be that if he said, "Let's let him go," they would have killed Yehuda and killed Yosef. Yeah. So I always argue what's more important. What's more important than what the reality is how he felt.
Right,
he felt this way. So he leaves.
So it doesn't. Well, that's why I'm wondering if. I mean, the only thing that's clear is that he left. I mean, that's a pretty,
right, but not just that
that's
he
a
left.
Pretty.
But look, you got to read it even more carefully. It's not Vayelech Yehuda Me'esechav, it's Vayered. He left in a depression. He went down. It was a Yerida. I mean, that's a very special word. Vayered Yehuda Me'esechav is that he was clearly leaving the family and he was leaving in a funk. And so it's very, very important to note that the first time that we see friendship emerging is in two contexts. This is the main point for tonight. The context when a person is down and out, number one, and number two, when the person can't get support from their family. Point in the Torah is that our basic support system in life is our family. But there are going to be times when the bonds of family are strained, and there are going to be times when a person needs to rely on somebody else. And that is where friendship emerges. And I think everybody here will agree with me that the time that friendship really expresses itself is when you're down and out, and you really need a friend. Okay? That's the point. And so a person has a kind of a safety net. And they could go to their parents, they could go to their brothers or sisters. But sometimes that's not enough. And that's really what this Parsha is teaching us. This Parsha of Yehuda is that friendship emerges in two contexts. Number one, when a person is down, that's where friendship really shows itself to be worth its weight in gold. And number two, when the bonds of family aren't enough. Vayered Yehuda Me'esechav, it's not an accident that that's where friendship emerges. Now what I want to do is read through the Perek. You have it in the Hebrew on page 2, you have it in the English on page 3. So if it's easier for you to follow along in the English as we go, you could just separate the pages or kind of hold it like this. I'm going to read it in the Hebrew. The reason that I'm going to read so many psukim is because since this story is not taught because of its fairly graphic nature, we're missing a very important story on many levels. So I'm going to read through the psukim and just, you know, basically teach a few things as I go along, and then bring it back to the context of friendship. Okay, so what do we know? That Yehuda is depressed, and he turns to a man named Chira, a Canaanite man. Okay, so the Torah says as follows: Vayar Sham Yehuda. Yehuda saw Bas Ish Kanani, okay, the daughter of a Canaanite man, Ushmo Shua, and his name was Shua. Vayikachaha. So Yehuda marries a local girl. Pashtus in the Psukim, he marries a local girl, the daughter of a man named Shua. Vatahar vateled bain, vayikra shemo er. So she becomes pregnant, and she gives birth to a child, and Judah names his firstborn son Er. Vatahar od vateled bain, she becomes pregnant again, and she gives birth to another child. Vatikra shemo onan. This time Yehuda is not the one naming, but the wife is the one who's doing the naming, and the second child is called Onan. So Yehuda has Er, Yehuda has Onan. Vatosef od vateled bain, third male child. Vatikrat shemo Shela, and she, Yehuda's wife, names him Shela. V'hayad b'chiziv b'lita oto, they were in a place called Chiziv when this third child was born. Okay. Vayikach Yehuda isha le'er b'choro u'shma Tamar. So Yehuda sets himself about the task of marrying off his children, and he marries off his eldest son, Er, to a woman named Tamar. Vayi Er b'chor Yehuda ra b'enei Adonai, vayimitehu Adonai. So Er, Yehuda's eldest son, his b'chor, was evil in the eyes of God, and God struck him down and killed him. Now, the Torah does not, as of yet, specify that which was, you know, his sin. What was the ra b'enei Hashem? We knew it was something wicked, evil, but we don't know exactly what it was. Okay, so vayomer Yehuda le'onan. So Yehuda turns to his second son, to Onan, and he says, bo el eshes achicha v'yabemosa. You should go to your brother's wife, now your brother's widow, your brother is dead, and marry her in the process of yibum, levirate marriage. V'hakem zera le'achicha. In this way, your brother who had no children will have a line. He will have offspring. He will have a future. So everybody here heard of the concept of yibum as it appears in the Torah? This is obviously before Matan Torah. So you see the concept of yibum was around. It was this ancient practice, which is actually in a certain sense a very beautiful practice, the idea being that everybody should have some future, and if a person, you know, unfortunately died before they had the opportunity to have children, that it was appropriate for one of the brothers to demonstrate that sense of brotherhood, to come along and to have a child in the name of, in the legacy of the brother who was deceased. Okay? So this became a mitzvah in the Torah later on, the mitzvah of Yibum. Okay, so Vayeda Onan, Onan knew ki lo lo yihia hazara, that the first child would not be his, it would be a legacy towards his dead brother. Vihaya, and so therefore, im bo el eshes achiv, when we'd have sex with Tamar, vishiches artsa, he would make sure not to perform the sexual act in such a way that she could become pregnant. Levilti nison zera la'achiv, so that his brother should not have a legacy. Wow. I mean, he dafka did not want.
Wow.
Right? So, vayera b'nei Adonai asher asa.
And then do you feel, so why did he marry her? Was he pressured into
it? Well, it doesn't say that he actually married her. It says, v'haya imbo aleshes achiv. So as the Rishonim point out, is that, you know, he was trying to have his cake and eat it too. He didn't say, no, 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 I'll stay away from her. He would say, no, 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 I want the pleasure of being with her, but I'm not going to actually give Zera to my brother, which is a pretty selfish thing to do.
But it's not that he doesn't want to support the kid that's going to come out through college and law school. It's that
if he's going to have a son, it wants to be his son. He doesn't.
So it's almost like he wants to possess his brother's woman for sexual purposes.
Correct.
But not
almost. That is.
Yeah.
That is what he's doing.
No.
Yeah.
It seems like he's wasting his time.
Well, what do you mean?
Maybe she was hot.
No, not maybe. Get there in a second. Okay, let's read the next pasuk. Vayera b'nei Hashem asher asa. Very good. Morty, baruch shekivanta. So, vayera b'nei Hashem asher asa. Right? God's. What, do you see how.
Just one second.
Let's just finish the pasuk. Vayera b'nei Hashem asher asa. So, it was evil in the eyes of Hashem that which he did. That's exactly the same lashon we had before. You see that, Ari? It's mamish the same lashon. You see, Vayi er b'chor Yehuda ra b'nei Hashem. Vayera b'nei Hashem asher asa. Vayames gam oso. So, Hashem put him to death also. But what's the term that's used
that's
is.
Why the chazal connect.
Ah, excellent. Because it says gam oso. He killed Onan as well, and he used the language of Gam. So Chazal learned that both of them really did the same sin. But I don't understand, how could both do the same sin? Because Onan's sin was, I won't make her pregnant because I don't want to get, right, I wouldn't want to get her pregnant and the child won't be mine. It will really be the legacy of my brother. So Chazal figured out exactly what Morty said, that Er, the first husband, was doing the same thing. In other words, he was being with her, but he didn't want to get her pregnant. Why?
She's not going to kill her looks.
Exactly, because mitoch yafya, she was very, very beautiful. And he thought to himself, this is a pretty selfish thing, she very much wanted to be a mother, but he said, I won't get her pregnant because then I won't be attracted to her anymore. So, I remember when they, when I first learned this story in grade school, I couldn't get my head around this point. But it's an obvious point, right? You understand the point. So Er did his sin, and Onan did his sin, which was, in terms of the Maisa of Er, it was exactly the same. They had different motivations. Er's motivation was that he didn't want to ruin her beauty. Onan's motivation was that he didn't want the son not to be his. So he said, I might as well have her because she's beautiful, exactly like Morty said, but I don't want to have the consequences of the son not being mine.
Tuval Kayan or whatever, where it says he had two wives.
Yeah.
One wife would like carry all the kids so she could get like old and ugly. I mean, not really, but like he was worried about the same thing.
That's so, exactly the way that Chazal, very good, understand. It's actually Lemach before him. Principle. Right. No, but that's correct. Ada and Sila, that Ada was supposed to be the woman that had the children, and Sila was Milashon, Yoshev Bitsila, that he would hang around her for conjugal purposes, but not for reproductive purposes. Okay. So who's the victim in all of this? The victim is...
A woman.
Yeah, Tamar. Can you imagine the trauma? I mean, talk about being objectified. This is as bad as it gets.
Does she know what they're doing, or does she think
she knows? She knows very well what they're doing. V'haya. I mean, how could she not? Just read the pasuk. You don't even need Chazal for this. V'haya im ba'al eishes achiv v'shiches arza. She knows exactly what's happening, but she's powerless to stop it.
Wait, so does she feel only bad for herself, or does she feel bad that she basically, she was the catalyst to kill two guys?
Well, but I don't think that she had to feel guilty about that.
The third guy will do the right thing.
Not, she didn't have to feel bad about that, but you imagine how she felt. So there's nothing she wants more to be than to be a mother, and here she's being... So she's not...
I'm saying, Daniel, there's also two dead bodies.
Yeah, but I don't think she has to feel guilty about that.
But the inheritance...
Okay, so the primary...
That was my question. If
Go ahead, Larry.
Onan had a child with her, then the child would have inherited, right?
Well, yeah,
and Onan would not have inherited, whereas...
Yeah, it would have been this, it would have been considered Aaron's child.
I understand. Right. So whereas this way, another reason for him might be that he wanted to inherit.
Well, that's exactly...
It wasn't just that...
No, that's not another reason, that's the primary reason. That's what it says, that Onan didn't want to have the child because he didn't want the child to be his brother's heir.
But I didn't think it was financial.
It's both.
What does she get out of it when the husband dies, according to...
Nothing.
Pre-Torah.
Nothing. You're going to see. She gets nothing.
Fine.
Zero.
If it's a divorce, yes. If it's a get, yes, but not...
Bingo. We're learning Yiddish also.
What?
Okay.
Gornished.
So, Gornished. Very good. Very good. So now what happens? Who's the second victim? Tamar is the main victim. The second victim is Yehuda, right? Because he lost two sons. Right? So talk about... He was depressed to begin with because, right, he's guilty about what he did to his brother. He leaves his family. So you can imagine this is not good for his mental health. He just lost his two sons. So Yehuda is a desperate man, obviously, and we can't blame him. So Vayomer Yehuda leTamar kalato. So he says, and this is the answer to your question, Tobin, Shevi almana beis avich. Go back to your father's house. She gets nothing except a ticket home. Okay? Ad yigdal Shela bini, until Shela, my third son, comes of age. Ki amar pen yamus gamhu ke'achav. Maybe he's going to die also like his brothers. Vatelech Tamar vateshe beis avia. She's dutiful. She goes back home. So it's understood that by etiquette and by practice and by protocol, Yehuda has to give his third son, Shela, to marriage with Tamar so that they can have children and thereby continue the legacy of Aaron Onan. But from his perspective, he's not entirely sure what's going on, but he knows that these two sons of his are dying, so he doesn't know what's wrong with her, that she's a man killer, and he's not about to let his third son get killed. And you can understand his perspective. He just lost his whole family. He just lost two sons. He's not going to be likely to...
How old is his son at this point?
Shayla's too young at this point. Then that's his excuse. But he's not planning on, as we're about to see, this is an excuse. He's not planning on ever turning the kid over. Right. So the two victims in the story are Tamar and Yehuda, right? Tamar's really had it bad, but Yehuda's had it pretty bad himself. So you feel bad for everybody. Okay. Vayirbu hayamim. So after many, many, many days, or years, Vatamos Bashua Eshes Yehuda, and if things couldn't get worse for Yehuda, they just did, not only did he lose his two sons, but he lost his wife. So Vainachem Yehuda is sitting in mourning, and he finally is comforted. Vaya'al al-gozezet, so he takes a trip to the sheep. Hu v'chira re'ehu adulamitim nasa. So what diuk am I going to make in this pasuk? Is that when does chira reemerge? Chira reemerges again in Yehuda's moment of need. The first time Chira emerged was when Yehuda lost his brothers, and he was separated from his family in that sense. But then when Yehuda loses his two sons and his wife, right, Chira is there again. And here the Torah uses that very special word, which is really the subject of tonight's shir. Vayal goes to Zaytonohu v'chira re'ehu ha'adulami. His friend, that Chira was acting as a good friend, and he saw that Yehuda needed to change of scenery. So he took Yehuda with him on a trip. We're going to see that's the second of three appearances of Chira. It's very, very important that Chira is constantly emerging when Yehuda needs it the most. Okay, so at this point, right, I mean, Tamar is back at home, and Yehuda and Chira are going on a trip. Okay, so Vayugad le Tamar lemor, so Tamar was told, Hinei chamich, Oletim natala ghost so no. Your father-in-law, who you haven't seen in all these years, right, because he's been where he is and you've been back at home in your father's house, he's coming to on this trip to shear his sheep. Vatasar bigdeal menusame aleha. So she removed her widow's clothes. You can imagine all these years she's wearing her widow's clothes. She's hoping and she's hoping that Yehuda will finally bring her back to the third son. Vatechas batzaif atitalaf.
She has to wait, or?
She has to wait. Yehuda said, you have to wait till I bring you the third son. That's the rule. It's really difficult. And not only does she have to wait, but she always has to wear bigdeal menusa, so it's understood. She's not on the market. She's a widow waiting for the third brother.
So she gets chalitza, right?
Or there's some process. Now, chalitza may not exactly have existed because it's before the Torah, but she gets dressed up. Vateisha v'fesa chaynayim asher al derech timnasa. And so she sits in the open. Ki ra'asa, what does she realize? Ki gadal shela. She knows that the third son shela is of age. Vihu lo nitna lo li'isha. What's happening? Yehuda had no intention of giving the third son. And she realizes it's now or never. The biological clock is ticking. If she wants to be a part of Yehuda's family, and all the Rishonim point out that that was what she wanted more than anything, is to be a part of the family. She realized it was a very special family with a unique destiny. She has to take matters into her hands. Vayireha Yehuda. Yehuda saw her. Vayachsheveha lezona. Ki chistafaneha. And he thought she was a?
Hooker.
Vayet eleha el haderech. So Yehuda, it's the second time in the parsha that we have Vayet. Yehuda's off balance. You can understand. Yehuda's lost his two sons. Yehuda's lost his wife. Yehuda's lost his brothers and his father.
Still a man.
Right? So, Vayeti lehal aderech, Vayomer havana avo elayich, ki lo yada ki chalatohi. Had he known it was his daughter-in-law, he would never would have done this. Vatomer mati tenli ki tavo elay. And she says, okay, but what's, you know, let's negotiate a price.
What's in it for me?
Vayomer anochi ashalach gedi zim min atzon. Right? Remember, he's doing what? He's here to shear the tzon, to shear the sheep. So he says, that will be the compensation. Vatomer, she says, okay, fine, but I need something in the interim. I can't just, you know, let it be that you don't give me anything. Vatomer im titene ravon ad sholchecha. And she says, you have to give me an eravon. Anybody know what the English translation of it? Very good. Excellent, Ari. So vayomer... Okay, ma'ar
yirbon ashi. That's a bond. Arvut is a bond.
Yeah, exactly. That's where it comes from. Exactly. So, vayomer ma'ar yirbon asher etein lach. What should be the eravon? Vatomer chotam choftilecha. Your staff and your seal. Something that is your, basically, we would say today, your driver's license. Your ID.
Your credit card.
Right. But something which is an unmistakable form of identification, okay? Chotam chauf tilacho matcha sharp yadecha vayitem la vayavo elaha vatar lo. So she becomes pregnant. Vatakom vatelech vatasar tzifa me'alel vatelbash bideal menuta. She goes back home and she changes into her widow's clothes. So Yehuda keeps his end of the deal. Vayishlach Yehuda eskidi ha'izim. Let's read this pasuk very carefully. Yehuda, so he sent the payment, the gedi ha'izim, as he said, he would pay up in the form of a goat, so to redeem his staff and his seal, and the person who he sent it with can't find her. Now, who did Yehuda send it with?
The same guy with
Chira. Excellent. So what do you see from this, Ari?
He could trust him. It was a confidant.
100%. He could trust him. And not only could he trust him, but it's a sensitive and somewhat embarrassing mission.
Yeah.
Right, as we see later.
So I just wanted
or even
to...
even at the time.
Yeah. So I just wanted to see... I just wanted to point out
he's,
is that... that this
to
is
pay off the hooker.
Right. But you see that this is what a real friend does, is that each time Yehuda's in need... When he loses his family to begin with, the second time when he loses his wife and his children, the third time when he needs to get his stuff back the morning after, so to speak, right? It's not directly the morning after, but you know what I mean. That's not exactly an easy trip to make, but he sends his best buddy. And that means something, okay? You know, that means something in life to have somebody who'll do that for you. Yeah. That's why the Torah doesn't describe it as just biyad chira, but biyad re'ehu. This is his man. And that's really important in life. Okay. So anyway, obviously, you know, she can't be found. And of course, we know what ended up happening is that she says, I'm pregnant. And then they were going to... Let's just continue reading on just a few more psukim. So, Vayikim Shalash Chadashim, after 3 months, Vayugad Yehuda Lemor, Yehuda was told, Zanta Tamar Kalatecha. Tamar, right, cracked. After all these years, she was with somebody else. Vigam Hine Harali's Nunim. And how do we know? Because she's...
pregnant.
She's pregnant. Vayomer Yehuda, so Yehuda says, Hotziu Aviti Sarev. Let her be burned at the stake, which had a lot took a lot of gall, right? Because after all, he failed her.
If this is the first,
dumps the brakes.
What's that?
He's just cleaning up the mess.
No, well, no, but he doesn't remember. He doesn't know that it was him. He's going to be shocked in a second. But the idea, idea really is, Kimad, this is right. pretty harsh of him because he knows he knows that he did what.
But that's what you do in this society.
Right, all right. But I'm saying, you know, he's going to admit
he's done
that
the same act, even bingo. If he doesn't know it's with her.
Not only that, but he wronged her. He was supposed to give her the third son. He's the one who drove her to this. Okay, so but I just love her poise. So two more psukim. He would say, she was being brought out to be burned. V'hi shalchal chami alemor. So she sent a message to her father-in-law. Said li'ish asher ela lo anochi hara. Vatomer haker na lemi hachotemes v'haptilim v'amateha ela. She says, oh, please just recognize whose staff and seal are these. Vayaker Yehuda. By the way, tremendous poise. She doesn't freak out. She just says, she doesn't know. Maybe he's going to deny the whole thing, right? He could have covered it up. But in his greatness, he said, Vayaker Yehuda.
No, you can't cover it up.
Hold on. Wait a minute. No. She didn't send this in public.
I know she did, which is to her credit that she didn't do it in public. But she didn't.
But she's
and
prepared to out him.
Right.
No. She's not.
Why?
How do we know
that?
I mean, who would have believed her?
Because she has the...
No, she gave it back.
She has the driver's license.
No, she gave it back.
She gave it for the goat.
She gave it back. It says, Himutse, Vishal Chamil, and the Isha Sheryl Eila Lo Anochi Hara.
She kept a little...
Vatomer Hakerna. She sent it to him.
She gave it back.
She gave it to him. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. That's
not it's interesting. All these years I thought that she told
me. No, but Tomer Hakerna, she would say, Hakerna, that means look at them. He holds them. Otherwise, it wouldn't be so great what he did. So, Vayaker Yehuda Vayomer said, Kami Meni. She's right, and I'm wrong. Kialkein lo nitatia l'sheila b'ni. As I failed her, she didn't fail me. Velo yasaf o the data. So Yehuda did two great things. Number one is that he admitted the truth and he didn't kill an innocent person. The second thing that he did is he didn't continue to be with her. Velo yasaf o the data. Unlike his son, who wanted to have his cake and eat it too, he didn't want to get her pregnant but wanted to have the pleasure of being with her. Yehuda wouldn't do that. He wouldn't take advantage of her that way. Okay, so the real point...
But then he...
Yeah.
Isn't he... So he can't marry her?
Well, he didn't think it was appropriate because she was his daughter-in-law.
Oh.
Right, I mean, once a daughter-in-law, always a daughter-in-law, but Providence would have it that she became pregnant, and this is the origin of David ben Yishai.
Right.
So I just wanted to point out something that Chazal already noted, is what language did Tamar use? Hakerna. Where did we see that once before in the Torah? What Yehuda and the brothers sent to Yaakov when Hakerna Haktonis bin Chahim Lo, is this the cloak of your son? And as Chazal point out, that Yehuda who tortured his father with the use of Hakerna, this is the ultimate comeuppance when he's confronted with his own Hakerna in an equally painful situation. Okay, so what I just wanted to point out here is it's obviously an incredible story on so many levels. Tamar is so brave, so poised. Yehuda, even though, you know, he's at a point of, the low point of his life, right? Lost his wife, lost his two children, lost his family. Still, at that moment, where everything was on the line, when Tamar was going to die or not, Vayaker Yehuda Vayomer Tzad Kami Meni. Chazal say that this is why Yehuda was Zocha to the leadership of the Jewish people. It's for this moment and no other moment, that because he had the integrity to tell the truth in public, God said, this is the kind of person I want to be my leader. But the basic point that I just wanted to bring out, just take a look at the bottom of page 3, is something that Shlomo HaMelech pointed out in Sefer Mishlei, Shlomo says, "V'yesh ohev davek me'ach," that sometimes in life there are friends who can be even closer than siblings. Sometimes in life, even if our siblings are somewhat estranged, or we're estranged from them, as was the case with Yehuda, "Vayered Yehuda me'es echav," who was it that kept Yehuda above water at this time? Each time it was Re'ehu Adulami. This is the value of friendship. Okay, and that sometimes, this is really what I love so much about this pasuk, sometimes what I would say, that's why I titled this section, friends can become family. Yesh ohev davek me'ach. You can have a friend, ohev here means a friend, who really does take the place of a brother, who acts as your surrogate brother. Now the final point I just wanted to make today is to show how, from Yiddishkeit's perspective, it's not only a friend who can take the place of a brother, but really the entire Jewish community is supposed to, in the back of our mind, or sometimes in the front of our mind, really relate to each and every person in the community as a brother. And what I mean is that, as we pointed out, sometimes when a person is down and out and they can't have family to rely on, friends need to step up to the plate. And sometimes if a person can't get the help that they need from family and can't get the help that they need from friends, we should think of it in circles. The next level out of support is the community. And the community really has to act, not just as, you know, some kind of a stranger, but really has to remember that on some level, we're really all brothers. And I want to show you this in the Psukim, how this is exactly the point that the Psukim make time and time again in the context of somebody who falls on hard times. When somebody falls on hard times and they can't get the help that they need from their family, and maybe they can't get the help that they need from their friends, how are we supposed to think about it as a Jewish community? And the word that the Torah keeps on using again and again is the word ach. You have to remind yourselves that we all have the same father. Kulanu b'nei ish echad anachnu. We're all children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And that means that even though we don't actively think of it, we really all are brothers. So let's take a look now at the psukim in Re'eh. I think there's such striking psukim. Kiya b'cha evyon. When there's a poor person in the Jewish community, and evyon is even beyond an ani, it's not just somebody who's poor financially, but somebody who's poor and therefore, you know, he's broken. He's broken spirited. Kiya b'cha evyon me'echad achecha. From one of your brothers. It's not an accidental term. Be'achad sharecha be'artzecha. In one of your cities in your land, Asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach, lo ta'ameitz et levavcha, do not harden your heart, lo tikpots et yadcha, do not withdraw your hand, me achicha ha'evyon. Twice in one pasuk, the Torah uses the language of achicha. Kifatoach tiftach et yadcha lo, open your hand to him, ve'aveta vitenu de'mach soro asher yechsar lo. You have to provide him that which he lacks. So the Talmud, based on this pasuk of de'mach soro, anybody know what the Talmud learns from this? De'mach soro? Yeah, Ari, go ahead.
People are used to.
Exactly. So this is where we came up with the halacha that afilu sus, right, the rochev alav, afilu eved, the larutz lefanav, within reason. Okay, that's not the end of the story, but that you have to bring a person back up to their level that they're used to, because the essence of tzedakah is giving a person their dignity back. So for some person, for you know, a particular kind of person, dignity might mean having a peanut butter sandwich every day. For another person, it might mean having a salad every day. For another person, it might mean having something a notch up. So again, this is a simplification for now, because we're not doing dinei tzedakah, but the idea is, de'mach soro means that the Jewish perspective on tzedakah doesn't necessarily mean the bare minimum, survival level. It really means getting the person back on their feet, materially and psychologically. Now, obviously, with limited resources, this has to be weighed with a very, 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 with a very sophisticated and reasonable sense of balance. However, I'm just pointing out that there's a point to be made here. De'mach soro is that we care about the well-being, not just that the person should be able to, you know, eke by, but the well-being of the person who's fallen on hard times is at the forefront. So he shamer lecha. God says, I'm warning you now. These psukim don't get any better than this, by the way. I mean, we salivate over these psukim. He shamer lecha, pen yed davarim livcha b'liya'al le'mor. Very evil and low thing that might be in your heart. Karvash nas hasheva shnat hashmita. The sabbatical year is coming. Vira'a einecha be'achicha. The third time you have that word. And your eye will cast dispersion on your brother. Ha'evyon v'lo titein lo. And you won't give to him. V'kara alecha l'adonai. and he will call out against you unto God, and God will see that you have sinned.
So this is not tzedakah, just throwing money at him, it's a loan.
Well, what is going on here? In very good. What is going on? What's the significance of Shemitah? Why is a person less likely to give as the Shemitah year approaches? What's the connection? Because we know that there are two kinds of Shemitah. There's what we call Shemitas Karkaos. You're not allowed to work the land in the seventh year, but what also happens in the seventh year? Shemitas... What is that, Ari? Very good.
Right.
Yeah, so what's the... So now explain the Pasuk. What's the Pasuk saying? That you're, the concern is...
You won't make a loan anytime you're Shemitah.
Yeah.
Because, so the Torah says, if you do that, may God have mercy on you. Because God will not have mercy on you.
So Yovel also, or no?
Right, so Yovel as well. Yovel as well. So the idea is very powerful. Is that God says, I know what you're going to think. You're going to think, well, okay, can't help the poor people now because I need to get mine back and he's not going to pay me back. God says, V'kara alecha l'Adonai, he will call out against you, V'haya b'cha chet. You will be held accountable. Naton titein lo. You must assuredly give him. Shemitah or no Shemitah. V'lo yira levavcha betit chalo. And do not let this trouble your heart. Ki biglal hadavar hazeh yivarechecha Hashem Elokecha b'chol ma'asecha v'chol mishlachedecha. Because on account of this matter, Hashem will bless all of the work of your hand and all of your handiwork. So I always like to say that this pasuk has two meanings. Number one, Hashem is saying that if you do this, you won't be cursed; rather, you'll be blessed. Ultimately, Hashem will reward you. Okay, as the Torah says, aser to aser, right, which literally means tithe. You should surely tithe, but we say aser bishvil shetit asher, that you should become wealthy. There is a very strong current within the psukim and chazal that a person who gives tzedakah will never end up the worse for it. But there's a second way to read the pasuk. Naton titein lo, you must assuredly give to him, lo yirale v'chav v'betit chalo, and don't be troubled in your heart when you give to him.
Because that's why you were given it initially.
Excellent. Ki biglal hadavar hazeh. It was only on account of this. You think you own this money? You fool. You're a steward. You think that you own that bank account? God owns everything in this world. Hashem ha'aretzum lo ha'tevel v'yoshveva. Earthly possessions. All a person needs to do is go to the cemetery and ask each guy how much they died with in their bank account. Right? It's not going to be too productive an exercise, because Hashem natan v'Hashem lakach. So a person who doesn't understand this, the Torah is saying, ki biglal hadavar hazeh yivrech Hashem lakecha b'chol ma'asecha b'chol mishlach yadecha. The secondary meaning, the first meaning is as we said, but the secondary meaning is this is why you have money, so you can do this mitzvah. If a person, and you always say this, and they can't point it out enough, if a person has been entrusted with a large amount of wealth, it means that God trusts them. It means that God has given them a job to do, and God has entrusted them with an enormous responsibility to use that wisely, because it has great use value in this world. And that obviously raises the stakes for that person. A person has to know how to use it properly to support people who can't help themselves. We live in a world in which the reality is not everybody is born able to take care of themselves. You know, go to a Yachad event, and you'll find that out very quickly. It's our responsibility to take care of people who can't take care of themselves. That's what the Torah is saying. Because I, God, created a world in which not everybody can fend for themselves, that means I also created a world where I gave certain individuals the means to take care of them. Period. So you got to do it. Because I will never remove poverty from this world entirely. God created a world in which there's going to be poverty, there's going to be inequality, because He wants us to help each other. Remember, in a world without any poverty, in a world without any inequality, in a world without any disease, there'd be very little room for human chesed. It'd be very difficult for people to contribute meaningfully. So God evidently desired a world in which there is an equality. Therefore, I command you, says God, because I created a world of inequality, a world where people are not always doing well. Patoach tiftach et yadcha, to the key word, le'achicha, la'niyacha, le'avioncha, b'artzecha. So many times in this short span of Pesukim, we have the term achicha. Because what the Torah is reminding us of is that there are biological brothers, and as we said in the Yehuda story, sometimes there are friend brothers, and sometimes there's community brothers. Now, the Rambam who I don't need to tell you is a super genius, when he codifies the laws of tzedakah, he beautifully, well, he doesn't announce it. The Rambam doesn't hold up a sign which says, I got this from the Psukim. But if you know the Psukim well, you know exactly what the Rambam is trying to do. When the Rambam codifies his laws of tzedakah, he makes this point very clear. He keeps on referring to ach, achdus, so that when you give tzedakah to a fellow Jew, remember that you're his brother. Remember that you have biological brothers in this world, and sometimes you act as a brother to your friend, and sometimes you act as a brother to somebody you don't know, but because he's a fellow Jew. So that we have this expanded definition of family. Sometimes friends become family, and sometimes community becomes family. Look at how the Rambam echoes the language of the Chumash in his Mishneh Torah. He takes the language of Achdus straight out of the Chumash and puts it in. One of the most beautiful halachas we have in the Mishneh Torah, and with this we'll conclude. V'chol Yisrael, all the Jewish people, v'hanilva aleihem, and including those who cast their lot with them, maybe Ger Toshev, maybe Ger Tzedek, I'm not sure, ke'achim heim, they are as brothers. The Rambam took this straight out of the Pesukim. Shenemar, banim atem la'Hashem elokecha, which means you're all children unto Hashem your God. So what does this have to do with Achdus? The Rambam is saying, if you have the same father, people with the same father are brothers. So you all have the same father. Banim atem la'Hashem elokechem. Memela, you're all brothers. V'im lo yirachim ha'ach al ha'ach. I just love this. Achdus, achdus, achdus. Right? And if a brother won't have mercy on his brother, if he won't have compassion on his brother, mi yirachim alav. Don't kid yourself. Nobody's going to come and help your brother if you don't. Ulimi aniya Yisrael nosi meinehem. To who can the poor amongst the Jewish people lift their eyes? Who can they rely on? Hala'akum, to the pagans, shesonin osan v'rodfim acharehem, who hate them and persecute them and chase them. Ha'ein einehem teluyos el aliachehen. The poor Jews have their eyes fixed, yearning for whom? Le'achehen. Their brothers. So four times in one halacha, the Rambam has used the language of achdus, of achva, exactly as the Pesukim did, to try and highlight that tzedakah, when a Jew falls, is down on his luck, the immediate reflex that has to go into effect is you remind yourself, this is my brother. This is not just somebody who shares my religion, but it's mamish, my brother. And that has to be the nature of our response. So what we really learned today is that you have family, but sometimes life is such that, you know, the biological family bonds aren't enough. And that's where friendship comes into the picture. A friend can sometimes act as a brother. That's the story of Chira with Yehuda. How Chira treated him is really like a brother. As the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Yesh ohev davek me'ach. Sometimes in life there are friends who are more fraternal than even brothers. And sometimes it's the community. The Jewish community can step up to the plate and really act as a person's brother.